Happy Friday. I'm so excited to be with you for another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. Every Tuesday, I bring you a new interview with a mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons that they've learned along the way. And on Fridays is my chance to just chat with you about anything and everything related to motherhood. So thanks so much for being with us today. And we're going to do something a little different today. We're going to do a question and answer episode. On Monday on Instagram, if you don't already follow me, you can follow me, Jessica Dahlquist 3. And I put out a video for our Mom Talk Monday on Monday. And I asked you, does anybody have any questions? Either questions for me personally or, you know, things you've been thinking about motherhood, tips, things like that. Now, I'm not an expert on motherhood, but I do have three kids. And, you know, I've been through lots of different stages and trials and trial and error. And so all I can give you is my opinion on things. So take it for what it's worth and let's answer some questions. This will be really fun. So the first question is from KMunt16 and she says, any tips or tricks on how to brush your daughter's hair without her screaming? Well, Kelly, I don't have any daughters, so this is not from personal experience, but right below, I love that Siri Powell recommended using a wet dry brush, starting at the bottom and working your way up. I think that's a great idea. She also includes a link, KMunt, so head on over to that that thread and you can click on the link and buy that from Sally Beauty. That sounds genius. If it were me, what I would do is I would kind of make it a game. Kids love anything that's fun. So whether it's cleaning up the room or brushing their hair, anything they might be resistant to do at first, if you can find a way to make it a game or make it fun, they're much more likely to do it without protest. So for example, brushing the hair. You know, I'm picturing mornings, stress, trying to get out the door. You're kind of forcing her to sit in front of you and you're brushing furiously and things. And I can imagine how difficult that is every single morning. It's much easier for my boys to walk out of the house with bedhead. So I do have it easier in that respect. But what I would do is I would say, okay, grab your doll. It's time to play hairdresser. And you're going to brush your dolly's hair and you're going to sit in front of me and do that while I brush your hair. So every time I do a brush through your hair, you're going to do a brush through your doll's hair. You know, and if her hands are busy and she's focused in on taking care of her doll, perhaps she'll kind of ignore what you have going on as you do her hair. I don't know, something to try. Playing hairdresser, making it kind of fun and definitely distracting is always good as well. So hope that helps. Yeah, sorry, boys are just easier in that respect. The next question is from Siri Powell, who gave that great wet dry brush tip, but she asks, what I want to know is, how do I help my boys have strong self-confidence and be less influenced from their friends? Whew, that is hard, hard, hard. And at every stage, the answer is going to be a little bit different. But it is so important to help your children develop a great sense of identity. And if you can do that from a young age and really instill strong values, morals, and strong character within them from an early age, you're setting themselves up for success. So what I would suggest is role playing. We do this a lot in our house. And, you know, it's hard when things come up on the fly and we're like in public and I'm trying to like deal with things, or I hear something happened at school and then I'm trying to backtrack and try and make it better. So if you can try and predict maybe what might happen at school or a situation you might face at the grocery store or, you know, things like that, and then role play it ahead of time, I find that can be so helpful and it's fun. So for example, like in the school setting and you want your child to be a good listener in class and they're sitting on the rug, my child's in kindergarten, so that's kind of my frame of reference right now. He's sitting on the rug, teacher's trying to teach at the front of the room. He has a friend sitting next to him that is, you know, giggling and making faces and kind of poking him and kind of egging him on. And your child has a choice to engage and do that kind of behavior back and potentially get in trouble for it, or they can stand their ground. So what I would do is at home say, okay, so we're going to play a little game, and I would sit down, have him sit down on the rug next to me and say, okay, I am your friend so-and-so, and you're Parker, and you're in class, and you're sitting there, And your teacher is, you know, teaching you how to write sentences. And all of a sudden, your friend starts acting silly and they're making faces and they're kind of poking you. And I would start doing this to him. And okay, I want you to show me what the wrong answer is. What should you not do? And you're kind of engaging back and forth in that silly kind of banter and say, okay, pause. That was great. Now, I'm going to do it again, but I want you to show me what you think the right answer is and the right way to behave is. I want you to show me if you know how to do that. And so I would engage in the same way. I'd poke him and make a face and see if he knows. And boy, it is so cool and empowering to them to realize that they know the right choice. They know the right answer. They don't have to be told how to behave and what to do a lot of times. And they can prove to themselves that they can withstand that type of temptation from their friend. And if they've practiced it ahead of time, they're much more likely in that same situation at school to not just impulsively react to, you know, their friend sitting next to them, but stand their ground and make the choice that they know is the right one. And so empower them. I also heard, I'm trying to think where I heard it. I think it's an idea from the Iyers, Linda and Richard Iyer, who are great parenting experts. And they, I'm pretty sure it's them. They did with their kids actual like role playing, but then had them like write down as they got older, write down what they would do in that situation. And so they'd bring up ahead of time, okay, you know, Johnny, you're entering high school and you're going to be facing a lot of hard things. You're going to be offered alcohol. You may be offered drugs. And we're going to talk about what you think you should do in that situation. And I'm going to help you to make that choice ahead of time so that when you're faced with that situation in that moment, you're not going to wonder, what should I do? Because you've already decided and you've already thought about it. And so no matter what age, whether they can write it out or not, talking them through, okay, so this is what's going to happen. These friends are going to seem really cool and they're, you know, you're at a party and it's really fun and you're going to want to fit in. And then, you know, they extend that bottle of alcohol to you and said, hey, just take a taste. Okay, so what do you think of that? How's that going to make you feel? And then by walking them through that, they can predict, you know, what kinds of things they're going to need to think about before and then make a choice. And in the case of if you have an older child, actually have them write that down. Say, in high school or whenever, if I'm offered alcohol, I am going to say this or I am going to do this. And when they are actually able to write it out or at least think it out or practice saying it out loud, what they're going to say or what they're going to do, they're much more likely to stick with that because they've already anticipated it. They've already decided what they want to do based upon their values, based upon what they know is right. And so when they're not caught off guard, they're able to make a better choice. So I really encourage you to kind of think one step ahead. It's going to be impossible to like think of every situation, but to at least kind of give them a framework for thinking ahead on things and giving them that feeling of empowerment that they know what the right choice is and they can do it. They can act on that. And giving them that sense of pride when they do make the right choice, I think is really great. And I think it's so important for them to be able to know that they can come to you and tell you about things that are happening in their lives and that you don't flip out when they tell you something that somebody said at school or something they saw or, you know, something like that. It's going to be hard. And I mean, my oldest is only 6. And so I know I'm just on the cusp of dealing with some of these things, but it's so important to never shut your child down or, you know, flip out in a dramatic fashion so they feel like next time they don't want to risk coming to you because of your reaction. So help, you know, broach these types of conversations and, you know, let them know, like, you know what's out in the world and you know the types of choices that are coming their way. And help prepare them to make those choices. They're not going to make the right choice every time, but hopefully if they make the wrong choice, they'll quickly realize that they don't want to do that again. So thanks for that question. On Facebook, I also got the question from Andrea Roberts. She said, I don't know if you've answered this question already. I don't think you have. What would you tell your pre-motherhood self? I loved that. Yeah, because I'm not a Tuesday guest, I don't get the opportunity to share, my thoughts on that question that I ask every single guest. But I'm not going to answer it today. I'm going to kind of tuck that in my back pocket, and I'm not sure when that answer is going to come out. I have thought about it, and I do have an answer pretty much. But I think I'm going to save it. Maybe to like a milestone episode. I'm not sure, but I'll answer that question eventually. So I heard you, Andrea, but I'm going to save that question and reveal the answer at a later date. I'm going to answer one more question. Tamara J. Powell. Hey, Tammy, my friend from high school. She says, I don't know if you've already talked about this, but I'd love to hear about transitions from 1 to 2 kids or 0 to 1, 1 to 2, 2 to 3. How the transitions went, what you anticipated. I love this question. And what I will say is every single family is different. Every single child is different, and no two experiences are the same. Some people say that 1 to 2 kids is like the absolute hardest because you're going from only one person depending upon you to juggling two schedules. And they say that's just the absolute hardest. Some people say 2 to 3 is harder because suddenly you're outnumbered, between you and your spouse, or you're outnumbered with your arms. And, so everyone has a different opinion. I think what really affects how well the transition goes is your level of expectation for what it's going to be like and what life is going to look like. So, for example, when you go from 0 children to 1 child and you have no frame of reference for what it's like to have another human being depending upon you 24/7, wow, it is a rude awakening. It is unbelievable that a little person like that can just demand so much of you and exhaust you to the core. You may have worked tirelessly in a job before motherhood, but man, you are handed a dose of reality when you realize you've never worked harder in your life than when you have that first baby. But then, once you have 3 kids or 4 kids or however many more kids you have after that, you think, oh man, I thought, 1 was so hard, but now I have 3 and that's way harder. But it doesn't mean that 1 is way easier just because it's a smaller number. I think every single added child, and depending upon their personality and their needs and things like that, I mean, having children is a sacrifice. And there's things to figure out with every single addition to your family. So if you only have 1 child, don't feel like if you're talking to your friend that has 3 kids that you shouldn't complain or kind of, admit that 1 child is so hard. Because it is. 1 child is 1 human being that depends on you for everything. And it's a big deal. So give yourself credit for that. And just because somebody has more kids, it doesn't mean that they're more deserving of being tired or being stretched thin or things like that. But I will say that personally, with 1 child, I had a hard first baby. And so my experience was really challenging. And I loved him and I was so thankful for him. It really tested my patience and my ability to cope with exhaustion and a baby that never stopped crying and, things like that. But then adding a second child who was very even-tempered, it was still hard because I had 2 to juggle. But once they started playing together, my job got a whole lot easier. I was just talking to somebody the other day who only has 1 child, and they were saying, I don't know how I can do any more. But really, if you have 2 children and they can entertain each other a lot of the time, I mean, yes, there's going to be squabbles, but you're really helping yourself out because you are not their primary playmate anymore. You can have them play together, and that is the best gift because then you free yourself up to either watch them, play with them, or do something else, and get something done in the house while they're playing. And so I really liked the transition from 1 to 2, especially once the youngest one hit about 18 months. And like I said, it's not the same for everybody. And my boys, get along really well. They're 2 years apart, 25 months apart. And so I feel really fortunate that they have a great relationship and enjoy each other's company so much. So that's made my life a lot easier. And then from 2 to 3 kids, the next one, Jackson, came along so I had a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and then newborn Jackson. And I feel like once I had been mothering for over 5 years, I'm on to my third baby. I just had a better sense of myself. I didn't feel near as concerned about doing everything perfectly. I didn't feel like I was constantly comparing myself to other moms. I felt like I had a lot more resources to tap into. Like, I knew what books I liked to read to give me ideas on and tips on both newborns and other children and things like that. And I just had a good handle on my own life and my own personal development. And I felt really comfortable with who I was and the expectations I had of myself and what my role as a mother was supposed to be and the type of mom that I wanted to be and what was important to me and what were my priorities during the day. And because of that, I mean, let's get real. My house is a disaster all the time. I do not pick up the toys every night. Well, I mean, I know that my kids should be doing that, but you know what I mean? Like, my house is not tidy every day. And when I had one child, all the toys fit in one box and it went on the bookshelf, you know? And so it's just so different. But I had to realize, I mean, I was just at the end of every day, if I was stressed because the house had toys on the floor, I could either choose to be upset, clean them up myself, or I could just forget about it and realize the next day they were going to get them back out anyways. And I could relax and read a book or do something that was life-giving to me. And so I've chosen that route. And it has been so much better for my soul. And I'm so much happier and able to be present with my kids. I'm not as stressed about, you know, having everything perfect in the house. My schedule is also really open, and I create a lot of margin in my life. I lead a really full life, but I don't like to say I'm busy because I'm not. I fill my life with things that are really meaningful to me, and I really make time for other people, but I'm not booked. I mean, my oldest son is on one soccer team, and the 3-year-old's in preschool. And I mean, we don't have a lot going on that we have to do during the week. And so my calendar's pretty open. And so on any given day, I can fill it with really enjoyable discretionary activities. I can do service type activities, which I really enjoy and really fill me up. And so create some margin in your life. The times where I am most fed up and on the brink of collapse as a mom is when I've crammed too many to-dos in a short window of time. And you may think you've puzzle pieced your day together super well, but guaranteed the baby's gonna have a blowout, or your child has lost their shoe, or they're hungry, or they're whatever. And you know, your timeline, I mean, you need to plan on way more time getting anywhere. I saw a meme the other day that was so funny. It was like, the irony of motherhood is that it takes you longer to load up in the car than the actual errand that you're going to do. And it's so true. So if you just create more margin in your life so that you're not constantly stressed, come on kids, let's go, let's go, let's go, and rushing. And I mean, it just creates kind of an atmosphere of tension. So the sooner, whether you have one child or 3 or 5 or 15, I mean, the more margin you have and the less you can like demand that your kids just like hup to and go according to your schedule all the time, no matter how many kids you have, your day will just go better. So I hope that's helpful. Everyone has their own experience. And I mean, not to say that I have it all figured out, but I wish I could go back to my one child self and lower the expectations I had, because I think that would have affected my ability to enjoy even that hard baby. And I think my perspective, I don't know, but it's hard to jump to that perspective before you've gone through it. So don't force yourself into that perspective if you're not there, but just know that there's hope for the future. You'll get there eventually. And hopefully I will continue to evolve and grow and learn more about how to be the best mom that I can be as well, because we're never done learning. So thanks very much for asking that question. I hope that helps. What a fun episode. I love Q&A. We'll definitely do that again in the future. So thanks for submitting your questions. You can always look again on Instagram if I say, hey, we have a Q&A episode coming up. Give me your questions. Also, you may not know that much about me personally, and I'm happy to answer those types of questions as well. So anything you want to hear from me on, definitely submit your questions on Facebook or Instagram, and I would love to answer them. So let's talk about next Tuesday's episode. I'm really excited. We have a book club episode coming up. A couple months ago, I chatted with my friend Stephanie Marston, who is my go-to mama resource. Everyone needs a Stephanie in their life. She is just so wise, and I so admire her as a mom. I just feel like she's doing such a fabulous job raising her kids, but also I love that she is constantly working on it. I'm constantly trying to figure out how to be a better mom. And I already think she's like off the charts amazing. But the fact that she is like really honest about her shortcomings or, you know, situations where she's trying to figure out how to be better for her kids, I just love that. We all need a Stephanie. So next Tuesday, we are chatting about another book. And that book is How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk. If you enjoyed our last book club episode, you are going to love this one. This is a book that really focuses on the communication between you and your child. And if you really think hard about any of the strife that you have during the day, a lot of the problems that occur boil down to communication issues. And so the sooner and the better you can more effectively communicate with your child and that they can communicate well with you, it is huge for your relationship. Oh my goodness. This book has so many great tips for all ages of children, from the youngest to the teenagers and beyond. And even, I mean, I take some of these tips and use them with my husband sometimes. Don't tell him that I'm using a parenting book on him, but it's so true. When we are talking in a way that is effective and respectful and kind, and when we are listening in a way that is genuine and not trying to take over somebody else's situation or emotions or things like that, wow, magic can happen. So I can't wait for you to tune in on Tuesday to my episode with Stephanie. We break down some of the excellent tips from that book and just give you a taste because there's so much in there. This is probably a book that you're, if you enjoy the episode, that you're going to want to purchase because there's just so much to it. There's great graphics and great scenarios that you can plug into your own life. So I would definitely recommend purchasing that book as well. But I know that you'll love that episode. And it was a fun one to record. And I feel like things have really improved around here as far as my communication with my kids since I read it. So I know that can have a positive impact on your life as well. Thanks for tuning in to this Friday's episode. It is always a pleasure to be with you. If you're loving this podcast, would you do me a favor? Share it with a friend. I put so much of my heart and soul into them, and I love getting your feedback. So I hope you have a great week, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.